Hello, listeners. We're continuing today with our different format. Instead of me interviewing others, we have the delightful and insightful Catherine Sword with us, and she'll be conducting the interview to try to squeeze my brain into doing some thinking. Hi, Catherine. Welcome back.
Hi, Charlene, and nice to be back. I'm not sure how insightful I am, but I've always said as a librarian, I have the questions.
So true. And
I might point you to the right book, you figure out the answers. And today my question is about something you've mentioned, emotional fluency.
Yes.
And it sounds silly that as a human being I should have a handle on this. I have emotions, but I also know that I don't, and that I've been trained sometimes to don't do that in public. You don't cry in public. You say that for when you're home. Don't be so silly if I'm laughing too hard at something. It goes to both ways. So how does one learn to be competent at expressing emotions?
Well, that's a great question, Catherine. It is not just about the expression of emotions externally. It's about recognizing emotions internally. Because emotional energy is a body flow. And so one of the prices that we pay in our culture is with that great phrase that fewer and fewer people are using, which I'm really happy to hear, is put it behind you. Just let it go. Don't think about it. Well, you know, my favorite image of that is that, what you're doing is packing a Mack truck.
Yeah.
And the next time you need to put the brakes on or you in your life, or you need to take a sharp turn because your life isn't working or something hits suddenly and you've got to make changes, you've got all that weight behind you and it's going to spin your cab right out.
Yeah.
So what do we do with the culture that we have developed, which says do not have emotion? How do you work with your emotions? Well, that's why I came to the term of emotional fluency. Emotions are a language. And the language is the language of the body in the same way that when we practice a martial art or any of the new forms of working with the body, new old forms such as yoga, we are going to contact within our skin. We're going to go deeper within our skin, ideally, because there's only one of two roads to go on in any of the physical expressions. One is to use your willpower to overcome what your body is wanting to do and push yourself to do what you think you're supposed to be doing, what you should be doing. And in my view, that's wrong, 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 wrong. And I will give you Bessel van der Kolk. Bessel, V-A-N-D-E-R-K-O-L-K. And he has a great best-selling book called The Body Keeps the Score. He's been studying this for 25 years. And in my view, he says what I've been practicing for 20 years with people. And that is that your body knows what it's doing. And so you've got the one route of using your body as a tool for you to feel like somehow you're superior to it, which is the old paradigm. And the new paradigm coming in is, no, you are practicing a yoga or a martial art even, or Qigong or any of the beautiful practices, deep release breathing, de-armoring, it goes across the spectrum, in order to become more sensitized to what is happening inside your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you become more sensitized to what's happening inside your skin, you will find that there are emotions that arise. And why is that? Well, here's why. When, as a child, and we've all had these experiences, we experience a trauma. What is a trauma? A trauma is unfinished emotion. All emotion in its natural healthy state rises in a wave and goes away again. Emotion that is from the child energy is so big to the child that unless they have an adult to actually, you have to think of this as sine wave formations, the same as you do with sound or with frequencies. It is the same kind of an expression, but it is emotional. If that child has a human being to go to, a mother, a grandmother, a trusted being, a father, and say, can't express it, and mom or dad or whoever it is wraps the child in their own body and says, it's okay, I'm here, literally what happens is the child gives that emotion to the adult. And if you are in that position, you know that's what's happening. They are moving, their emotional energy will come through you, and you're big enough to take it.
Okay.
Their body is not big enough to take that wave. Now, this is, again, all brand new in the whole system of being human. This is all brand new information. So if the child does not have someone to go to, the waves will be stopped. So now you have a huge pressure internally, and so much of the life force is spent trying to keep that emotional tsunami at bay, and the person that is in conflict with themselves. So if instead the person is given the opportunity to work properly with some of these emotional expressions through physical work or through breathing, is very, very careful. You have to be very careful with breathing, whether it's meditation or yoga, whatever it is, because breathing is a direct path. Even mindfulness people, I find they fling around the notion of breathing as though there's no consequence. Well, in fact, breathing will bring these emotions to the surface.
Yes.
And so what is the joy of that? The joy of that is learning how to surf in that emotion. Right? Now, you've raised a question around the whole business of, well, you have to do this in public or private, or what that conundrum is. And here's a system that I found worked, and I think everyone should know about it. If you take a period of time in your life when you decide you're going to do some emotional work, then it's like homework. You put 2 hours a week aside for that work. You write whatever you know of the trauma or whatever the story was that you were told, or you write from your emotional life as it stands today. Gee, you know, I've just noticed, for example, I always get this kind of emotion when that happens. I'm going to start writing about that. I'm going to start figuring out if there's something under there, because it happens over and over again. Whenever you can get to that place where you start seeing the patterns in your life, you're at a point where you can start to consciously work with your emotions. There are other points that you can do as well. This isn't the only one, but it's one of the ways for people to know, I can work with my emotions this way. So then you take 2 hours a week and you focus in, do some writing, and feel your body. Try to feel your body. Sometimes nothing much will happen. Other times there will be emotions that will flood and flood. If you just keep at it, emotions will start to flood through in those 2 hours. They will not last. Most people are afraid of their emotions because they think, if I get angry, I'll never stop. If I get angry, the mountains will fall. If I get angry, the rivers will reverse their course. If I get angry, the planets will spin out. If I get despairing, it will never stop. If I go into that, what feels like an ocean to me of sadness and despair. And I just need to reassure people, it is not going to happen that way. I had a severely abusive background and got into a car when I was 16, as you know. And it was driven by two criminals who pretty much thoroughly rearranged my notion of life and my body. And I was badly hurt. And I've had to work very, very hard with emotion, more so even than the physical healing. It's the emotional looping back and back, back and back. And so you take 2 hours a week and you put all of that focused attention on your troubled spot right there. I used to call it my little shop of horrors. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go visit, in my head, I'd say, I'm going to go visit my little shop of horrors. And I would do that. And then at the end of it, I would have a stop at the framework of walking into the little bathroom. And I would say to myself, that's the bad stuff. It's staying on the other side. Now I'm going into cleanse, very much a ritual cleansing, but a lot of fun. I would get some bath salts or some bubble bath or maybe a tiny little half a glass of wine or a book that made me laugh, blow bubbles, whatever it was. My job was to allow myself to not go there. My job was to wash that away. And when I got up from that bath, that was it for the week. Any of the other thoughts or intrusive memories or thoughts that came had to be put into that 2-hour time slot. If I had a particularly difficult day with some of the emotions, I might come home and just write down a number of ideas and then put them away. Because you need a very strong ego platform. You need to know you're in the present. You are not in the past. Yes. So if you work that way, you really do a lot of work quite safely.
Yeah.
And you can gain emotional fluency such that the next time someone says something that in the past would have stymied you or stopped you in your tracks, or you find a different way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, what you're doing is releasing the stuckness in your body.
Yeah.
When emotions are locked into the body in the form of trauma, and this is what Bessel van der Kolk's great work is about, Kolk's work is about the trappedness of a trauma in the body. And it's what I experienced, was that my body was severely traumatized. I couldn't feel it. And so working gently, working persistently, going back, what happens is, and it was explained to me by a Qigong master, if you have a trauma, say, for example, you just have an accident as a child, you fall out of a tree and you bruise your upper arm and your arm is badly traumatized, it's painful, you cut it off. The lymph, blood, and oxygen cannot flow in that traumatized area. And if the lymph, blood, and oxygen cannot flow there, they can't take the toxicity away. Everything slows down. The chi itself, the vital force of life, slows down in any area of your life that has been traumatized.
Yeah.
And what that comes to is autoimmune disease, cancers, depression. And we know now so many diseases, including autoimmune diseases, cancers, diabetes for certain, are what we call comorbid. And that means comorbid. They have comorbidity with depression, meaning 10 years before people get cancer, and the studies for this are in Europe. We don't have them here yet, or at least they're not widely advertised. But 10 years before someone gets a cancer, they go through a period of depression. They can't shake the depression. Okay? Same with diabetes. Now, if we take diabetes on a metaphoric level, diabetes is a problem with you can't process the sugar in your body. Well, that means you can't process the sweetness in life. Well, that's a really succinct way of describing depression.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. So all of these ideas are coming into the mainstream place now, and we're beginning to understand emotional fluency leads to emotional resilience. Okay. So instead of being crashed down by the things that life gives you, once you have this emotional fluency, you know the difference between what is a truly, truly tragic thing and what is like, ugh, for crying out loud. As many people say now, it's a good problem to have.
Okay.
It's a first world problem, and that's a really difficult political statement to make on the one hand. On the other hand, there's a certain truth to it. Get a perspective. How difficult is it in the face of what's happening on the planet? You see?
Right.
But you only have that perspective. And I have to also say emotional resilience, which is one of the great outcomes of emotional fluency. Emotional resilience is so marvelous because you can get difficulties, like major life difficulties, delivered onto you. People have this experience. It does not make you stop in your tracks.
Right.
You go down for a week, you cry for a week, you have your time, or a week and 10 days, whatever, you go, yeah, I'm still in it, I have to, but you know that on the other side of it, rebirth is happening. And you don't get stuck, you don't get mired in it and paralyzed. Because the price of not having emotional fluency is life paralysis.
Yeah.
Just as your body gets stuck, your life gets stuck, your options get stuck, your capacity to enjoy choices and differences and live in a world where every day is a different and a different kind of rainbow. It's a different kind of experience. Sometimes with the darker hues, sometimes with the lighter hues, but it is all moving and all. You can't get there without including the emotional body. And so that is really the work that I do with people, is trying to open up the emotional body.
Yes. Yeah, and if I can just jump in for a quick moment and go back to gave an example of the child falling out of the tree and hurting the arm and cutting it off. I want to make clear to listeners that we're not physically amputating it. It's a sort of a mental. It's a decision that I'm not going to feel that pain. I'm going to ignore that pain.
Well, it's the unconscious that says the pain is too great for this tiny body. The psyche will not hold together under that amount of pain. And we see that a lot with sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's called dissociation if the person is aware of themselves at top of the room or whatever the case may be in that way. But there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different degrees of cutting off oneself. And it'll happen from the unconscious because it is anything that is perceived as a life threat will not be received into the conscious mind until the conscious mind is older. And the body is bigger, and there's more life experience.
Yes.
And then it can be that particular process of going back and releasing. So I want to make clear that it isn't necessarily, it's not a conscious choice at all. The other thing that happens is the part of the brain, the neurons that fire together and wire together, will fire together and wire together to keep that numbness, to keep that lack of feeling happening.
Yes.
And there are an enormous number of people walking around without their bodies.
Yes.
It's quite sad, because the body is also the home of the enrichment. It's the home of purpose. It tells us why we're here. Just by saying, yeah, I really like that. No, I don't care for that. And the more you follow, yeah, I really like that, because we are in a gifted culture, the more you follow, yeah, I really do like that. Given that it is not unhealthy for you or for anyone else. I'm not talking about addictions or perversions. That's a whole other discussion. But someone who likes to sing, for example, and decides they're going to go back to school and just take some singing because it's fun. That's a healthy decision. That's what I'm talking about. Your body is the one that helps you understand. Oh, I like that. I like that. You may start out thinking it's in your head, because that's where most of us can identify ourselves, above our eyebrows. But the actual identity is in the body. And so these are some thoughts that I find fascinating, and I've been working with for two or three decades now, at least. And again, I want to thank you. We've come again to the nearly to the end. Is there any other question you wanted to ask about this, Catherine?
Oh, heck no. They'd open up so much. But again, this, I think, hopefully listeners will have questions of their own. And think, because I know myself, I'd say, oh, I'm perfectly, you know, okay as an adult, I'm well adjusted, I can manage things, and then something will happen, I realize it's all clenched in my jaw, or it's all in my neck and my shoulder. Oh dear, that's where I put it.
That's right.
So there are clues, if people want to sort of check in with their bodies, like, oh, why do I always have this tight?
Exactly. So thank you so much, that's a very important point. It's a sort of a pedestrian thing that we live with every single day, is trying to figure out what to do to release the stresses of our bodies. And I can tell you that nothing is better than a good cry or a good laugh. Either way. Thanks again, Catherine. I hope
Thank
we'll
you.
Be joining us again soon.